Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to It's Storytime Gather Round with your hosts, authors Christy Condaleo and myself, J.D. Holliday. On Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will be here and read a story to you. Parents, or you, if your children have any questions or comments, you can call in after the story is read. Our number is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259. Or you can join us in the chat room here at Blog Talk Radio. It's Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on June 23rd, 2012. It's story time, gather round, can be listened to live at blogtalkradio.com/worldofinknetwork, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you like at the same address or on iTunes by researching World of Ink Network. You can also find information about our show at our site. It's storytimeforkids.blogspot.com. Hi, Christy.
Hey, Jen.
We have a storybook today. What story are we reading today?
Oh, we have a wonderful bedtime story. We're reading the picture book Oli and Zack and the Port of Tumbattle. It's by Michael Madden. Oli and Zack and the Port of Tumbattle is illustrated by local school children, and all of the proceeds when the book was put out went to the school charity. Oli and Zack and the Port of Tumbattle tells the tale of two small boys who go off in search of adventure. They hitch on a ride on the back of a turtle on their way to the Port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled, and they meet a host of pirates and several strange creatures as they look for lost treasure. The adventure is fast-paced with loads of characters, and it's all told in entertaining rhyme. All right, I'm ready to start. It's Oli and Zack and the Port of Tumbattle, and it's by Michael Madden. Have you heard of Dr. Seuss, who took some words and then cut them loose by rhyming them with this and that in tales of Grinch and of a Cat in a Hat? Well, here's a tale he did not tell about two boys you know quite well, a story that fits right in line with riddles and fiddles and all in rhyme. It tells of the adventures of there and back, of heroes and villains, of Oli and Zack, of dangers, of treasure, and magical spells. And it starts at the sound of jingle bells. What do you think we should do today? Said Oli to Zack in a bored kind of way. Let's find some treasure and other great things, said Zack, whose mind often wandered to whims. After taking some time to consider a reply, first Oli said no, then Zack said why. It's just not right, that's why. And Zack just said again, but why? So Oli thought again and again and tossed it over in his brain. He turned it this way, turned it that, upside down and front to back. He looked at it from all ways around. He flipped it up and flopped it down. Then, after he had tried and tried, he could not find a reason why. He turned to Zack and said, okay, we'll go and find treasure today. But how should we start and where should we look? And Zack just shrugged, we'll make it up. Should you say go? Should I say go? How do we start? I just don't know. Do we leave at 9? Do we leave at 10? He looked at Zack, who shrugged again. We'll know when it's time and what to do. Just pack some lunch and supper, too. But Oli liked to have a plan. He liked it to be spick and span. I suppose that we'll just hear a noise and wander off like two lost boys. His voice contained a touch of gold, but Zack agreed, we must be bold. Ding dong, a bell rang far away. That's it, said Zack, we're on our way. Dingle, dongle, dingle, dong. The bells are singing. Come along. To the north, said Oli. West, said Zack. I'll lead us there. You lead us back. So off they marched one sunny day. Their treasure hunt was underway. For an hour or more, they marched along, singing aloud their treasure song. Come along, Oli. Come along, Zack. We're going to bring some treasure back. Then all at once, the sky turned gray. The sun said, aye, no more today. There was a flash, a bang, a roaring train, then drip, 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 some drops of rain. It rained, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained. It rained all day, then it rained again. It rained one, two, then it rained three, four. It rained five, six, then it rained some more. It rained five, six, and then it rained on past the count of 10. It rained past 15, 30, phew. It didn't even stop at 42. It rained till at least 120. And then the sign in the cloud changed from full to empty. They looked around, surveyed the scene, looked at where things should have been. The grass was gone, the pathways too. Instead of bushes, seaweed grew. We're in a fix. It isn't good, said Ole. We're in a flood. We must go on, said brave young Zach. We'll have to swim. We can't turn back. And then they had a stroke of luck. Ole pointed, shouted, look! The water rippled and into view. A shape came closer and grew and grew. Its head bit bobbed, and on its back with a shell, Zach said, what is it? I still can't tell. It's a turtle, of course, said Ole with scorn. And as it drew near, it sounded a horn. Well, how do you do? Said the turtle with pride. It's your lucky day if you're after a ride. I'm headed west to the port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. That sounds about right, said Ole and Zach. Didn't have to think twice as he jumped on the back of the turtle, and when they were safely in place, the turtle set off at a most gentle pace. They were off to the west, to the port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. They drifted along as a cooling breeze blew, and the turtle said, my name is Henry McGrew. I've sailed these waters for many a year, and I wasn't the least bit surprised you were here. I'm Ole, said Ole. I'm Zach, said the other. Ah, yes, said the turtle, the other one's brother. That's right, said Zach, but he's my brother, too. And with the brothers and others, he was now quite confused. So, said the turtle, you're each other's brother. You each have a brother, and each brother's the other. It sounds like there should be at least four of you. Now, Zach's head was spinning round Henry McGrew. But Ole wasn't listening. He spied up ahead two other young boys who were stuck on a ledge. But these boys were odd, a peculiar sight, for the one on the left was the one on the right. There must be a mirror, said Henry McGrew. There should be just one, but clearly there's two. Don't be silly, said Ole with the widest of grins, for these two fellows are simply just twins. Can we jump on board, asked the twin on the right. For sure, said Ole. Just hold on tight. Then the one on the left took his place at the back, and the one on the right sat down next to Zach. Where are we going? Asked the one at the back. And the one to speak wasn't Henry or Zach. It was Ole who said, west to the port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. As if on cue, they both sang their song and bade the others to sing right along. Come along, Ole. Come along, Zach. We're going to bring some treasure back. I'm Ole, I'm Zach, I'm Henry McGrew, and what single name is shared by you two? Oh, no, said a twin. We are not the same. We have quite separate, different names. My name is James, always the same. Not Jim or Jay or Jimmy, just James. Jimmy, Jimbo, and Jambo are names, but they are not mine. Mine is just James. So then Ole asked, and what is your name? To the one whose name was clearly not James. Thomas, he said, and he looked pleased as punch. Now, is it the time to have us some lunch? So Ole and Zach and Henry McGrew, with Thomas and James joining in two by two, sailed to the west to the port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. They sang lots of songs, told stories as well, then a nose popped out from under the shell. It was followed by ears and a head and a tail, and a mouth stood before them right under the cell. That was fixed to the shell of old Henry McGrew, who said, ah, this is Hercules, he is my crew. Pray tell them, said Zach. You're a turtle, I see. You don't need a crew to swim through the sea. Ho, ho, but young Hercules is quite a good catch. When the story gets itchy, he gives me a scratch. And when I get hungry, he makes me some lunch, and he also makes the tastiest pomegranate punch. Up to this point, the mouse had said not a word. Now, he said to McGrew, this is really absurd. We were sailing quite calmly across the great ocean. With these four on board, there's quite a commotion. And what will they eat? There's not on the shelves. That's okay, said Ole. We bought some ourselves. And so they sat down in the middle of the sea, eating biscuits and corn cobs and pods full of peas. Then Thomas took a bag from a sack on his back, and he opened it up, and he showed it to Zach. Inside there were crackers of every size. Then he said, I've packed about 2 weeks' supplies. Crunch, crunch, scrunchy, scrunch. Nothing is finer than crackers for lunch. Crackers with butter, crackers with cheese. Crackers just about any which way you please. They munched on the crackers, washed down with some fizz, and Henry said, what a splendid little party this is. As slowly they drew near the port of some battle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. When the day turned to dusk, they saw lights to the west. That is some battle, said McGrew, who knew best. Little by little, they eased into the port, but Zack had been troubled by a worrying thought. Are the pirates still there? He asked Henry McGrew. Only on Mondays and odd afternoons. They come for repairs while their laundry can dry, and on Mondays the Black Heart makes chocolate fudge pie. Now Thomas was puzzled, and Zack and James too. What on earth is the Black Heart, please, Henry McGrew? He lowered his voice and beckoned them near. It's the end of some battle, and really nothing to fear. It's where treasure is talked of and stories are told, of pirate doubloons and of Gogarty's gold. Gogarty was Irish, with hair flaming red, who had a fortune in gold, or so it was said. But he died with no money, and not very old, and no one knows where lies Gogarty's gold. For he sure didn't spend it, he never left town, and some say it's gone and will never be found. But oft in the Black Heart, when full of the boons, old Billy the Bear said he knows there are clues. But Billy had promised it would never be told, so it's best not to speak of Bugardi's gold. They came to a halt, and then Henry McGrew said, wait for a minute, we're coming with you. They looked here and there, through lanterns and lights, and Ole said we'd best get a room for the night. Ahead in the darkness, a shape loomed up high, and Zack was quite scared of the shadows and cries. He said, I think we must have gone the wrong way. That's the Black Heart, said Henry. That's where we'll stay. And so they arrived in the port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. And they stood there outside the old Black Heart Inn, wondering what adventures they'd find there within. From inside they heard laughter and shouting and singing, and outside above them a sign was a-swinging. On the sign was a heart just as black as the night. It looked almost alive in the airy moonlight. They stepped right inside and surveyed what they saw. An old man, they shouted, "Oi, there! Shut the door!" The room was quite full of the strangest of folk. In the corner, two wolfhands were sharing a joke. A parrot sipped rum from a cup on the bar, whilst the sailor had trapped a small bird in a jar. To the left was a blacksmith with hands black as coal, and beside him a horse drinking grog from a bowl. To the right on a table, playing games with some dice, were three monkeys, a weasel, and a pair of white mice. On his own, drinking soda with a face filled with joy, sat the solitary figure of an 8-year-old boy. Who's that? Whispered Ole to Henry McGrew. That, replied Henry, is Bluebeard Bruce. He's too young for a beard, gasped Ole with surprise. To the beard that he has, said McGrew in reply. In a pouch round his waist, there's a beard of blue. And for a swig of your juice, he will show it to you. He won it in a contest when everyone cheered, for he cut it from the blood bloodthirsty pirate, Bluebeard. Thomas then pointed, I look over there, and the sight that they saw made all the boys scared. Sat alone at a table, eating grapes with his knives, was the biggest thing they'd ever seen in their life. Its teeth were fierce, set deep in its jaw, and where they had fingers, the creature had claws. Then Henry shook hands with it, quite without care. Come here, my new friends, and meet Billy the Bear. After they had met him, Billy wasn't so scary, and they knew that they need not have been quite so wary, for Billy was quite a jovial bear, and his big booming voice could be heard everywhere. Billy was wearing a hat on his head, his jacket was torn, and his shirt was just threads. His trousers were ripped with a hole in the knee, and around his neck hung a rusty old key. Then Ole asked Billy, hey, what's the key for? And for a moment, old Billy just stared at the floor. Then he looked up at Ole with eyes that were cold and said, it unlocks a secret that will never be told. The room was so quiet they could hear their own breath, and Billy's hard stares froze them all half to death. So Henry thought he'd better lighten the mood. Is anyone hungry? I'll get us some food. He crossed to the bar and said, how do you do? Here at your service is Henry McGrew. The barmaid just cackled, which frightened some birds, and said, my, Mr. Henry, they are fancy words. So Henry went on, my companions and I would like some hot food and a room for the night. And how will you pay? Asked the maid with suspicion. With gold coins, of course. I'm a well-known physician. I suppose I can trust ye, she said with a grin, and I'm sure there's a room, so settle right in. She poured them some drinks, then went into the back. What are we having for supper? Asked Zack. The maid soon returned and said, well, you're in luck. Usually the kitchen's just full of old muck. But today there's a feast that the cook said she'll make. There's toast, and there's chips, and there's chocolate cake. Zack overheard and was filled with delight. His favorite foods were on offer tonight. He waited with joy for the barmaid to bring his supper, but till then he just had to sing. Toast and chips and chocolate cake, what a wonderful supper they will make. Chocolate cake and chips and toast, that is what I like the most. Toast and chips and chocolate cake, I eat as much as you can make. Chocolate cake and toast and chips, I'll clear my plate and lick my lip. The food was served up on plates of plenty, and old Ole and Zack and all of their mates tucked in, and afterwards, just to be daft, Zachary burped and everyone laughed. Then Ole went over to Bruce. Hi there, he said. Would you like some juice? Yes, please, said Bruce. It's so hot in here. I suppose that you'll like to see my beard. Oh, yes, said Ole. Is it really blue? Come closer and I'll show it to you. So Ole moved closer, bent down in a crouch, whilst Bluebeard Bruce unfastened his pouch. He pulled out the beard, as blue as the sea, with several small creatures that Ole could see. The crabs have moved in and made it their nest, but the black-headed gillyworm is simply the best. What's a gillyworm? Asked Ole with surprise. The Bruce shook the beard and disturbed a few flies. The crab scuttled this way, and a lobster went that. Then a black head popped out and asked, hey, what was that? The head was then followed by a body quite long, and it spoke once again, is anything wrong? This is the gillyworm, said Bruce with a smile, and he's lived in the beard for a very good while. He's 6 feet long, and his bite has a sting. But at 7 each morning, he loves just to sing. He sings about mermaids and penguins and whales, and galleons and clippers with wind in their sails. The gillyworm stretched, and he yawned, and he said, have you two quite finished? Can I go back to bed? So Bruce took the pouch and put the beard back, and then they were joined by Thomas and Zack. To each and each other, they were all introduced. So what are your plans? Asked Bluebeard Bruce. We're looking for treasure, said Ole with pride. We arrived with old Henry, who gave us a ride. There is no treasure here in the port of some battle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled, said Bruce, who continued, but I can help you, if you will allow me to come along too. But how can you help? Asked Zack with a frown. If you say there's no treasure in Tum Battle Town, Bruce replied, there's a village named Barracuda Fold, quite close to here, and it's rumored that gold can be found thereabouts from years gone by, though no one knows where and no one knows why. But I'm sure we can find it if we stick together, and we'll have to start soon. We're expecting bad weather. We'll set off in the morning, said Ole at last, and Bruce can become a part of our cast. But across from the table, unknown to the gang, was a one-legged pirate named Despicable Dan. Dan had been listening to all that was said, and the gold and the treasure now danced in his head. He decided if booty was soon to be found, for Barracuda's fold, he should now be bound. So Dan closed his eyes and slept where he sat, and with him slept Porky, his fat pirate cat. Meanwhile, old Henry had taken great care to say nothing of the treasure to Billy the Bear. The hour was late, and Billy was tired, and his eyelids grew heavy as he sat by the fire, whilst Henry just watched with his hands on his knee, and he kept his eyes fixed on the bear's rusty key. Billy had supped his bear share of rum, and soon he was snoring as loud as a drum. He slumped in his chair with his head on his chest, but this was no time for Henry to rest. From inside his waistcoat, he pulled out a box. He opened it up, and then, sly as a fox, he took out the key like the one that the bear had tied round his neck, and he guarded with care. Henry was a turtle with a very sharp brain. To swap the key, two keys, that was his aim. The bear had a treasure key hung from his head, whilst Henry's just opened his old garden shed. So he slipped Billy's key right off from its chain. But then Billy grunted and grunted again. He licked round his mouth with a lollipopping tongue, and under his breath he was singing a song. His head slipped down further, and this wasn't planned, for his chin was now resting on poor Henry's hand. Henry McGrew then cursed his bad luck. Without waking the bear, he was surely stuck. Then Hercules rescued him, quite without fear. From on the bear's shoulders, he blew down his ear. With his eyes still closed, the bear snorted, "Fwah!" Then he swatted his ear with a big hairy paw. Then Henry was sharp, and his hand was now free, so he quickly replaced the bear's rusty key. He sat back in his chair, and he was really quite pleased that his plan had actually worked with some ease. Then he gestured to Ole and Zach and the rest, "Be off to your beds, for that would be best, as tomorrow adventures would likely be found. Then sleep now, as morning will soon be around." "But can't we go now?" asked Zach with impatience, a trait that was common in all of his relations. "Of course not," said Henry. "It's been a long day," and Zach did concede there was no more to say. So Ole and Zach and Thomas and James, who'd been sat in front of the flickering flame, went up the stairs to retire for the night, and the barmaid called out, "Third door on the right." They were closely followed by Henry McGrew, with Hercules leading up Bluebeard Bruce. And as they all lay tucked up in their beds, Henry had one final tale for their heads. He told of the key that he'd taken from Billy, and the room went so quiet, and the air grew so chilly. Then Ole piped up, "But isn't that stealing?" And Zach bumped his head on the rather low ceiling. "Quiet down," shouted Henry, in a tone rather curt, and Zach rubbed the spot where his head rather hurt. Henry said, "This is the port of Tum Battle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. Everyone has ears, and there's ears everywhere. So when speaking to strangers, you have to take care. And Billy won't know that this key ain't the same. But what is it for?" asked the twin that was James. "Don't know for sure," replied Henry quite bold, "but Billy says much about Bogarty's gold. And someone, somewhere in some place, it just seems to me, a lock will be found that belongs to this key. It may be a box or maybe a door. And when it is opened up, you can be sure. It will lead to the gold or some other fine treasure, like silver or rubies or pearls for good measure." And at that, they drifted off into their sleep, dreaming of pirates and secrets to keep. Elsewhere at the inn, the bar was now still. The whole of Tombattle had, it seemed, had their fill. A cock crowed at dawn, but nobody stirred, until Ole heard singing like twittering birds. He listened intently to a rather sad song. It wasn't a song for singing along. It told of a ship that was lost to the sea and the sailors that perished to rest in the deep. The voice was so clear and mournful and firm, and it belonged to the black-headed gillyworm. The beard where it lived was laid flat on the bed, and it sang as it waved its black head. Two crabs and a seahorse were listening along to the gillyworm's lament of his sorrowful song. Then all at once, Bruce heard the crow of the cock, the gillyworm singing, "It's 7 o'clock." The room was awake, even Zachary stiffened. But old Henry McGrew said not a word. "Let's get ourselves ready, that onwards we'll go. It's quite a tough trek out to Barracuda Fold." They washed and they dressed, but almost in vain. "What's for breakfast?" asked Zach. He was hungry again. "Ho, ho, little Zach," said McGrew with a smile. "There's no time for that. It will take us a while. We must set off now for Barracuda Fold. You can stop for breakfast whilst hunting for gold." As soon as they could, down the stairs they all tumbled, as Zach's empty tummy just rumbled and grumbled. Then out through the door he thought, "Why not take a minute too much on some chocolate cake? A minute won't matter, or two at the most. Just time for crackers or maybe some toast." But Henry McGrew just would not be told, and he marched them all towards Barracuda Fold. So now they were gone from the port of Tombattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. The sun said good morning as onwards they went, and all were excited at such an event. Above them were all kinds of birds on the wing that chorused everyone started to sing. "Come along, Ole, come along, Zach, we're going to bring some treasure back." Just then, up ahead, lying flat on the ground, was a creature whose shape was incredibly round. None of them knew of its crafty dark plan, for the creature was the cat of Despicable Dan. A green eye opened as Olia drew near. Then it opened the other one, quite without fear. "Good day," it said, with a pussycat smile. "No one has passed by this way for quite a while. Pray tell where you're headed, and I can come too." But that raised suspicions with Henry McGrew. He looked at the cat and fell straight through its plan. "I've seen you in town with Despicable Dan. We're just out for a stroll on this fine sunny day, and we don't want pirates to get in our way." "Oh, no," said the cat. "I've met Dan, and it's true, but I just want to be part of your crew. And then when you get to Barracuda Fold, I may know something of Bogarty's gold." "Aha," said McGrew. "The truth has come out. You're the cat of a pirate, of that there's no doubt. For we have said nothing of Bogarty's gold. It's just an old story that often is told. You're wasting your time, so go back to Tombattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled." The cat wandered off with his task incomplete, and at least for now he admitted defeat. But Despicable Dan was a wily old fox, and the cat knew he'd have lots more tricks in his box. But Henry McGrew and the mouse and the boys continued along with a very strange noise. "I can't help my tummy, it's rumbling," said Zach. So Thomas gave in crackers, the last from his pack. They arrived at a hilltop, and way down below was the village that was clearly marked Barracuda Fold. It nestled between cliffs on a wide stretch of beach where the sand was the color of an overripe peach. They could make out a church with a spire and a bell. There were houses and horses and a boatyard as well. Henry then pointed to the cliff to the south, where below was the trickle of an old river mouth, and then to a wasteland just down from the river were rocks and dead trees that made all the boys shiver. "It's the boneyard," said Bruce, "and the wind blew so cold, the legendary boneyard of Barracuda Fold." "What's a boneyard?" asked James, as an innocent remark. But McGrew said, "Not a place you should be in the dark. The boys of dead pirates lie there in their grave, a lesson to all of how not to behave." Now, tales of the boneyard gave Zack quite a fright. He said, "Henry, we mustn't still be out here by tonight." So Henry replied, "We can turn back right now." But Ole and Zack both wrinkled their brow. "We've come much too far to abandon our quest," said Ole, who dreamed of a huge treasure chest. "It's onwards we go," and McGrew led them down to Barracuda Fold and the outskirts of town. They came to a field where sheep roamed about and wandered around until Ole called out. He found a huge table, ornate in its style, and Henry said, "We can rest here for a while." They unpacked their breakfast, and Zack tucked right in two juicy red apples that dribbled down his chin. There were oranges, too, and some bread and some cakes. Said Zack, "What a fabulous breakfast this makes." But they couldn't understand, for his mouth was too full, as though he was chewing on fine cotton wool. "That boy is quite greedy, and that is for sure," said Bruce as Zack swallowed and then asked for more. Just then, a deep booming voice could be heard. It frightened the sheep, and it silenced the birds. From behind a tree stepped an odd-looking creature that Ole thought looked like his old English teacher. Its body had spots like a Dalmatian dog, but its feet were just trotters, like those on a hog. It had long, wavy hair that flowed down its back, a mouth full of teeth, and eyes that were black. Zack stopped his eating, and James dropped his head. The others just froze as if they were dead. Then the creature spoke out in a voice not so fierce, but loud enough for Zack to cover his ears. "Who gave you permission to enter my land, to eat at my table a meal so grand?" Then Henry stood up and held out a flipper. "I'm Henry McGrew. I suppose I'm the skipper. We've come from afar, and we needed a rest. After many miles east and many miles west, we set out this morning from the port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. We meant no harm here, meant no harm at all. We'd be glad if you join us. There's plenty for all." But the creature just looked with disdain at the food. "Not now," it said sternly. "I'm not in the mood. My name is Wranglebert, last of my kind. I'm a rumple fox. I like to play with your mind. So stay where you are, and I'll sit in the middle. And when I'm ready, I'll ask you a riddle." So Wranglebert sat between Ole and James. Then all around the table, they each said their names. Wranglebert, the rumple fox. Zack was in awe. He'd never heard such a grand name said before. "Are you a king, or a duke, or a lord?" "Oh, no," he replied, "but I do have a sword. It belonged to a pirate named Johnny Cutthroat. He gave it to me when I mended his boat. But enough of this chat. It is time for your test. You must solve my puzzle to continue your quest." Then Wranglebert looked at them all round his table and said, "Here's my question. Let's see if you're able. What is a letter that is not in its name? If you see it tomorrow, it will not be the same. Answer my riddle, and you can go on. If not, it will cost you a doubloon for each." When Wranglebert finished, a sentence broke out. His riddle was tricky, of that there was no doubt. Henry looked mystified, Thomas as well. No one had the answer, no one could tell. But Ole was turning it round in his brain, like the clickety clackety click of a train. Suddenly he knew. He'd worked it out right. He got up from his seat and started to shout. "The question is it. The question's the answer." He leapt up and down like a mad ballet dancer. But Wranglebert, he was not so amused, whilst the rest of the boys were simply confused. Then Henry called out, "Please say what you mean. Explain to us all. Come on. Say what you've seen." And Ole just laughed. With arms held out wide, "This riddle hasn't much of a secret to hide. The answer is C, the deep, shiny C, spelled S, E, and A, with no sign of a C. The C that will change as each wave hits the beach. So I guess we can go, Zack. Please pass me a peach." Oli was quite pleased when his answer was checked, and Wranglebert's scowl told him it was correct. But soon the rumpled fox said, "Oh, well done. And can I come with you? I fancy some fun." So a turtle, a mouse, and a strange rumpled fox with five eager boys clambered over some rocks to a path by the sea where the wind blew quite cold and continued their journey to Barracuda Fold. In the sand on the path, their footprints were clear, but then came a sign that Henry had feared. Up ahead, there were other strange marks on the sand, made by the false leg, Despicable Dan. They passed a few houses, a handful of people, and eventually came to the church with a steeple. Then just beyond that, some tables and chairs outside a cafe called Badgers and Bears. The tables were empty, so they all took a seat, and Zach was quite hungry. He wanted to eat. So Henry McGrew said, "Now that we're here, I'll order some lemonade, milk, and root beer." A shadowy figure appeared from inside. He walked with a limp that he just could not hide. He crossed to their table and bade them good day and welcome to Barracuda's Fold Best Cafe. McGrew was surprised this was not in the plan, for the waiter was bad old Despicable Dan. But Henry just asked for some drinks and some cake and wondered about the next move they should make. Thomas said, "That man looks awfully familiar. I saw him last night, or someone quite similar." "That's Despicable Dan," said Bruce with a sneer. "There's no doubt that he must have followed us here." "That's right," said McGrew, "but there's no need to worry. We'll finish our drinks and be gone in a hurry. We were bound to find Rogue somewhere on this trip. But stay sharp, and I'm sure we'll give him the slip. I think to the west is the road that we'll take." Then Despicable Dan brought the drinks and the cake. He said, "What brings you to Barracuda Fold?" Then he laughed. "Is it treasure or Golgari's gold?" "Oh, no," said old Henry. "It's nothing like that. We're visiting friends for a drink and a chat." But Dan was not pleased with a silly reply. He looked hard at McGrew, looked him straight in the eye. "Be careful around here. You have to take care, especially the boneyard and places around there." "Don't worry about us," said McGrew. "We'll be fine. We won't be here long. We'll be gone before 9. So Dan shuffled back inside the cafe. Then quickly McGrew shouted, "Let's be away." They finished the drinks and set off in haste. "Come on," said old Henry, "not a moment to waste." They headed out west, and the day was still fair. Then the rumpled fox stopped and sniffed the air. "What is it?" asked Bruce. "Is all not quite well?" Then Wranglebert said, "It's a cat I can smell." By now they all had their noses up high, but the thing that they smelt caught them all by surprise. Stood in their way like it had once before was the cat of Despicable Dan, back for more. "Have you found any gold?" asked the cat as it purred. But Henry and the others, they said not a word. Then Bruce broke the silence in a very stern tone. "Our business is told to no one but our own." They pushed past the cat as if it wasn't there and gave it advice, "Tell your master, beware." Then into the woods, the path seemed to lead. Going this way and that, they traveled with speed. They came to a house that looked empty and cold, the first that they'd seen out of Barracuda Fold. They opened a door and tiptoed inside, and Henry said, "This looks like a great place to hide. A pirate won't be able to follow our trail. We can't look for treasure with him on our tail." But inside the house wasn't pleasant at all. There were cobwebs and spiders on every wall. "I don't like it here," said Zack with a cry. "And what will we do if the pirate comes by? They won't find us here. We're safe as can be," said the rumpled fox. Then he put Zack on his knee. Thomas pulled out a torch from his pack. It lit the whole room, which comforted Zack. Then Bruce found a picture beneath an old chair. It was a horse and a man who had flaming red hair. He showed it to Henry, who got quite excited. And Hercules, too. They were both delighted. "Don't you see what it means? Don't you see?" asked the mouse. "This place where we're hiding is Golgari's house." "Golgari's house," they all shouted as one. "So let's find the treasure," said Zack. "Do come on." "We'll split up," said Henry. "I'll go upstairs." Searcher beware, it's much better in pairs. Oli and Zach then opened a door, and a rat, then another, raced over the floor. While Stranglebert went to a room on the right, with Hercules holding a flickering light. Bruce and young James looked all round the hall, while Zach, just by chance, leaned back on the wall. But the wall wasn't solid, it swung open wide. Zach peered in, but it was too dark to see inside. He called to the others to see what he found, and very soon they were all gathered round. Zach grabbed a torch, and in the faint glow, they could just see some steps to the cellar below. This place was hidden for a reason, I'm sure, said Henry. Come on, this is where we'll explore. They went down the steps, and Bruce led the way. But when they had done, there was nothing to say. The cellar was empty, with no sign of gold, just dirt and damp and air that was cold. They were all disappointed and filled with despair. But Zach said, no, wait, there's a gap over there. And there, right in front, sure enough, was a hole, 3 feet of the ground and the size of a mole. Zach put his hand in and rummaged around, then screamed when a great spider, black spider, ran out. So Oli took over and felt in the wall, but it seemed that the hole hid nothing at all. Then at last, Oli's hand touched something quite cold, but it didn't feel like treasure, and surely not gold. It was hard and quite straight. A lever, perhaps? Then it seemed as though the whole house would collapse. A noise came like thunder that shook the whole room. The lights went out. It was dark as a tomb. They coughed and they sputtered as dust filled the air, and the cobwebs and spiders got caught in their hair. Then Thomas bent down to feel on the ground, and soon he was pleased with the thing that he found. It was the torch that he dropped when the wall started quaking. He turned it back on to find everyone shaking. They were also relieved to be back in the light, and then what they saw made an interesting sight. A tunnel had appeared where before stood the wall. It was 4 feet wide and 7 feet tall. Come on, shouted Bruce, let's get out of here. And the boys all agreed, now quite without fear. So Bruce led the way with the others behind. They hurried along. They had treasure to find. But then came more rumbling, and all they could see were more rocks and more dust from where they had been. Then everything stopped like it had done before, but the entrance to the cellar wasn't there anymore. Oh, no, we're trapped. What next? Questioned Zach. Go onward, said Henry. We can't go back. So onwards they went, but quite slowly at first, and secretly Henry feared the worst. What if the tunnel was just a dead end? How would they get out? On McGrew they depend. Then the tunnel just stopped. There was nowhere to go. But Bruce said, hey, look, shine a torch down below. And in the dim light, they made out some wood. Then they rubbed and scraped as fast as they could. A panel appeared in the wall from the floor, so they carried on scraping and rubbing for more. 5 panels appeared right up to the roof. Then a handle and a keyhole. This surely was proof. A secret passage, a secret door. There must be treasure beyond it for sure. But when Bruce turned the handle, the door was shut tight, so Henry McGrew used all of his might. It still would not move. They could not get it free. Then Henry eventually remembered the key that last night he'd taken from Billy the Bear, the key that old Billy had guarded with care. He fumbled at first, and it fell on the rock. Then he carefully placed it into the lock. But it just would not turn, neither this way nor that. They were filled with dismay, and the mood fell quite flat. Then Wranglebert, the Rumble Fox, came to the fore. Let me try, he said, and he strode to the door. He pushed and he pulled and he banged on the key and grumbled out loud, just how stuck can it be? Then Thomas announced, I have an idea. I've packed olive oil to bring the key here. He carefully poured oil all over its side and said, maybe that will help it to slide. So McGrew put the key in the lock one more time, but the oil had made it quite greasy with slime. Then finally he managed to get a firm grip. It turned very slightly, then started to slip. So Zach had to go, as his hands were quite small, and it turned a full turn with no trouble at all. McGrew held the handle, and he pushed it, and he heaved. Then at last it moved. They were all so relieved. The door opened slowly with a groan and a creak. They were all so excited they wanted to wanted a peek. The light from the torch swung this way and that, at first on more cobwebs, then a number of rats. And soon the great door would open no more. They could all just squeeze through but what was in store. The room they were in was as black as the night. You wouldn't have guessed that outside was daylight. The beam of the torch had become rather pale, and before much longer it could very well fail. It went from one side of the room to the other. "I can't see the treasure," said Zack to his brother. Then in the far corner, the torch lit a shape, a lump or a hump that was covered by a cape. Over there," shouted Ole as he ran. "Shine the torch in the corner as quick as you can." He knelt by the bind, and the cape touched his hand. It was obviously belonged to someone quite grand. It was velvety soft with fur around the hood, but beneath it was something quite hard made of wood. He pulled back the cover to see what was there, and for a moment all he could do was just stare. His heart was a-pounding, as were all the rest, as before them was a sturdy old oak treasure chest. "Open it up," shouted Zack. "Is it full?" Then Ole took the lid and he gave it a pull. It was heavy and old, and the hinges were rusty, and the whole of the chest was really quite dusty. It was ornately covered with star-studded moon, but inside was a treasure, 10,000 doubloons. They were gold, they were silver, some big and some small. Doubloons everywhere. There was plenty for all. Then Henry spoke out in a voice rather gruff. "We've done rather well in finding this stuff, but now our problems begin, there's no doubt. We're trapped in this room, I see no way out." Henry was right, they all knew it too, but the rumble fox tacked on the wall with his shoe. Thomas and Zack moaned, "We're all stuck in here," but Wranglebert said, "No, I've got an idea. And here it may be dark, but I hear lots of sounds, the ocean, seabirds, noises from all around. It comes from outside. These walls aren't so thick. If we all push together, that might do the trick." He carried on tapping to the left and to the right. Bruce asked, "Are we going to do that all night?" "Oh, no," said the Rumble Fox, smiled at his face. "Only until I can find the right place. Somewhere I will find the wall will be thinner. We'll push on it, and we'll be home for dinner," said Bruce. If we are, I'll be very impressed." Whilst the boys put the coins back into the chest. At last the Rumple Fox said, "This is it. We all need to push on this little bit." He leapt on the wall, and he started to heave. "Come and help," he exclaimed, "if you all want to leave." McGrew was the first, and then he called to the rest, "Hurry up, and we'll push. We'll put his idea to the test." They used all their strength to lean on the stone. At first there was nothing. Then the wall gave a groan. A single rock fell, and the light flooded in, and Wranglebert's face held the widest, wide grin. They heaved once again, and the wall tumbled down. But when they looked out, they were nowhere near town. There were trees without leaves that had died long ago, and an old wooden sign that swung to and fro. As the wind hit the trees, they heard walls and moans, but worse, on the ground there lay lots of bones. Arm bones, and leg bones, also sorrowful. In front of them, staring, the eyes of a skull. The boys were now shaking and not through the cold. It was a legendary boneyard at Barracuda Fold. "Come on," shouted Ole, "I don't like it here." But McGrew said, "Don't worry, there's nothing to fear. These bones are dead from centuries before, though once they were pirates, they are pirates no more." "I still don't like it," said Ole, and so he picked up the chest and he started to go. The others were glad to be back on their way, and so was McGrew, though he didn't like to say. The boneyard was making a strange, eerie sound as the wind softly whistled through bones on the ground. But then something awful just scuppered their plan. Before them, unsmiling, stood Despicable Dan. They stopped in their tracks and let out a gasp. Was this treasure about to be ripped from their grasp? The pirate stepped forward, his sword in his hand. "Give me the chest," was his only demand. But the rumpled fox had a sword of his own. He challenged the pirate. "Leave us alone. We found the treasure. It was all fair and square." But Despicable Dan was in no mood to share. He was ready to fight, and quick as a flash, it was sword upon sword as they started to clash. Then Wranglebert beckoned for the others to flee. "I'll see you at my place in good time for tea." So Hercules, Henry, the boys in their box, left Dan, the pirate, and the rumpled fox. Right through the boneyard, a barracuda fold, but their find had already been many times told. The road back to town was a terrible sight, with scoundrels and rogues to the left and the right. They'd heard of the treasure the boys had just found, and now for the boneyard, the pirates were bound. "To the sea," cried McGrew, "to the beach. Take the path to the beach. Once the water will be out of reach." A thunderbolt crashed, and they saw it raining, but as they left the boneyard, the pirates were gaining. Meanwhile, the rumpled fox fought like a man, and soon had the better of Despicable Dan. He thrust his sword as Dan turned around, then his old wooden leg fell to the ground. The rumpled fox saw that this was his chance. He fled without giving the pirate a glance. Out of the boneyard, he could just see McGrew, followed by a mob and a hullabaloo. The turtle was game, and he got to the sand in front of the pirate's whole menacing band. Wranglebert raced in a skip and a hop. He saw him standing on the top of a rocky outcrop. McGrew told the boys to jump right on board, as just behind they saw sabers and swords. Then the turtle cast off right into the sea, and Wranglebert shouted, "Hey, wait for me!" He dived straight in and swam hard and fast. He came alongside and caught them at last. They pulled him right up, and he sat on the shell. But away in the distance, they could just hear a bell. "What's that?" asked young Zack, who'd been quiet for too long. Then clearly they all heard the sound of a gong. "I don't know," said Henry, "but let's just be quick. Those pirates might just have one more little trick." "But what are we headed for?" Hercules sighed. "Full steam ahead," the turtle replied. "We'll follow the coast to the port of Tumbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled." But on the horizon, a shape had appeared. "More pirates?" called Zack. It was just as he feared. The gong and the bell both rang out anew as the skull and crossbones came into view. On the beach, the pirates were making a raft. "More speed," shouted Zack, and Wranglebert laughed. "We'll need more than a turtle to rescue us now," he continued, "and I think I might just know how." He took from his pocket an odd-looking thing, a long, thin pipe with at each end a ring. He put it to his lips and pulled on a cord. These rings went tight, then he leaned overboard. The end of the pipe went under the sea, and he blew, counting one, and then two, and then three. Finally, he stopped and sat back with a rest. His face was puffed out and through with his chest. "What happened?" asked Thomas. "What did you do?" And the rumpled fox smiled at the rest of the crew. It won't seem like much to you, set up here, but below, the fin whistle rings out loud and clear. "What's a fin whistle?" asked Ole with concern, as the pirate ship closed with every small turn. "It's a magical whistle of coral it's made. It calls to the sea to come to our aid. But, Wranglebert, how can the sea help us out? With pirates all around, we'll be caught, there's no doubt." Then Henry cried, "Whoa," and stopped in his tracks, and his passengers slipped and fell flat on their backs. The waves were now bubbling around in a pool. Then a dolphin appeared, and James shouted, "Pool." The dolphin approached from the turtle's front end and shouted, "Hey, Wranglebert, my old foxy friend." The dolphin leapt up and splashed down in the sea. Wranglebert said, "I knew she'd come to me." "Meet Gabby the dolphin, a good friend of mine. With her at our side, I'm sure we'll be fine." Gabby then leant on the side of the shell. She said, "A friend of old. Bert is my friend as well." But this time the pirates were closing right in, so Gabby said, "Quick, tie a rope to my fin." The shouts from the ship were as loud as can be, and bloodthirsty pirates were all they could see. "You'd best hold on tight," called Gabby at last, just as a sword from the ship flew right past. A splash and a whoosh saw the dolphin away. Pulling old Henry through a torrent of spray, Gabby was flying, and such was her pace, that the pirates were done, they were not in the race. When they were quite safe, the Dolphin slowed down, and soon they could see a familiar town. Ole said, "Look, it's the port of Tunbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled." Gabby bade them all the fondest farewell, and the Rumpelfox said he must leave them as well. As they pulled into port, still carrying their treasure, Wrangleboard said, "Bye, it's been a great pleasure." Then through the town they passed the Black Heart, the place where the hunt for the treasure did start. They headed out east for many a mile and rode on the old Henry's broad back for a while. Then Zack opened up the chest once again and said, "Look at the fun you can have in the rain." He picked up some gold and squeezed it so tight, and he thought to himself, "This is really quite light." He looked at the coins and broke them in two. He pulled one back, and it gave him a clue. He stood up and shouted, "It's our lucky day. This treasure's not treasure you find every day." "Whatever do you mean?" asked Ole, with a frown. So Zack took some coins and said, "Pass them down. They're not made of silver. They're not made of gold. They're made of chocolate from Barracuda Bowl." They all took a bite and then shouted hooray. It was a wonderful end to a wonderful day. They said bye to all the twins and then Henry McGrew, who swam off with Hercules and Bluebeard Bruce. Then Ole and Zack headed home for their teas, carrying the treasure and fond memories of the time that they sailed to the port of Tunbattle, where pirates once fought and sabers once rattled. The end. Well, Jen, our time is just about up.
Right, and that was by Michael Madden, and his site is michael-madden.co.uk. And it was a wonderful adventure story, and our time is just about up. I'm J.D. Holliday, and you can find me and my books at thebookgarden.net. My co-host is Christy Conaleo, and you can find her and her books at epiescreations.com. For more information about us and our show, you can go to our site. It's storytimeforkids.blogspot.com. Thank you for joining us today. We have no shows for the next 2 weeks, but join us on Saturday, July 14th for Amelia Frump and her Peanut Butter Loving Overactive Imagination by Debbie Rapolo. Bye now.
Bye, everyone.